mean, how did you get into this field?
Well, sort of by accident. I graduated at Cambridge in 1973 and went off to work for a company called GEC, which was not GE, that's different to GE, it's the British version, but they were the biggest UK electronics company. And I got to work in high-speed digital communications, which was okay, but I worked there for about a year, and I thought I did okay, and I produced this long report on the project I've been working on, and my boss sort of looked at it and said, that's very good, and he put it on his shelf. And I think that was the last time he looked at it, and I thought, I don't feel particularly motivated by this.
No kidding.
So I went back to Cambridge and did a PhD, and Frank Forsyth was just starting to look at speech processing. He's really a control engineer, and he had some what looked like interesting projects. In fact, I chose a project on speech synthesis, and that's how I started. I remember the very first day I arrived back at Cambridge to do my PhD, and Frank said to me, Stephen, we've got a little job for you before you start. In fact, we have an appointment at Addenbrooke's in about 50 minutes. Could you manage that? Okay, so I climbed into his car and we whisked off to Addenbrooke's, not having a clue what was going to happen.
From Cambridge?
It's the hospital. It's the local hospital.
Okay, I see.
Yeah. I get taken into this, basically an x-ray department, where they start to inject barium paste in all my vocal orifices. And start asking me to start saying these things, because actually he was working on vocal tract estimation.
Wow.
And so he wanted x-rays of people speaking various sounds, and these were, in those days they were hard to come by, and the dosage levels were such that you could only do it once with the technology at the time. So about an hour, probably exaggerating a little, 2 hours after starting my PhD, I was sitting in the hospital with my mouth and nose full of barium paste, valiantly trying to say these sounds that I'd never heard. I didn't even know, the idea of a phonetic alphabet was, IPA and so on, was completely alien to me.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, this is real science, suffering for your, And that's probably the first and last time I did any serious experimental speech sign. Well, but that was my start.
Well, that was really baptism by fire.
Yeah, that's right.
So he had already scheduled you without checking this out.
Well, he scheduled somebody. He had some slots, and the but he didn't. I think I was top of his list for
guinea pig for the day.
Guinea pig for the day.
Well, so how did things proceed from there?
Well, I kind of he had two or three students working on that, which it was using LPC to basically inverse filtering, and then but the innovation was to actually generate displays of the vocal tract, which could be used for deaf children to improve their speech. It's a biofeedback thing. You could, and that work progressed for several years. Meanwhile, I was more interested in speech synthesis and ended up doing a PhD on concatenation synthesis, which in retrospect was way ahead of its time because that's how they actually do it today. But in those days, it wasn't. It was viewed as cheating.
Right.
Probably still today, but it was.
But it works.
But it worked very well, yeah. Mm-hmm. It worked very well. Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the contributing factors to why wasn't used sort of practically early on was just the cost of all the memory.
That's right. So
the throughput of being able to do it in real time.
The application was the main specific because you could only store a limited vocabulary, but the obviously it sounded pretty good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then what was the course of action?
Well, I left, by the time I finished my PhD, I was getting a little, probably a bit tired of speech I went off to be a lecturer at UMIST in the control system center initially. So I was actually away from speech for a few years, from about 98 through to about 82 or 83. I was working on actually designing the real-time programming languages.
And where were you doing it?
At Manchester Institute of Science and Technology in the UK.
And so what brought you back to speech?
Well, my boss at the time in Manchester sort of, when I used, I suppose, an informal appraisal, said, well, this is very interesting work, but is it really what you want to be doing? He was kind of telling me that there were people with proper computer science degrees who could do what I was doing rather more effectively, and he was quite interested in having a more diverse range of topics, and he kind of encouraged me to go back to speech. And so, but I went back to it not from the signal processing end, more from the higher, more programming symbolic side. So I started a project with British Telecom, which is a spoken dialogue system called VODIS, and it was train inquiry system. And we used the technology we used for recognition was it was collaborative with Logica.
I remember Logica.
Janet.
Yep.
And this machine was called Logos. I remember it well. It was a
big box
with racks of Intel 8086 processors in it, and it could do as much as 200 or 300 words continuous, connected speech recognition real time. And we built a kind of dialogue system around that.